night is quite peculiar to Buddhism, I think. And I gave this talk previously in Buddhist Library, so I apologise to those who've actually heard this before. But I can't see any faces who are actually there, so I think I'm on safe ground. But it doesn't actually matter, because what I find is, first of all, everyone's moving away. but what I find is, every single talk that I give is different. But more importantly, for a talk like this, the participants are really important to it. So the fact that you all are quite different, I think we will have a different atmosphere and result to the end of the night as well. So as I was saying before, prior to meditation, this is a night where you actually get to participate. And it's all about you looking within and understanding yourself for what it actually is. So let's begin. How this personality test will reveal your path of Buddhist practice. This isn't the test, but I just want to start off with something fun, right? Now, you've probably been subjected to my test before, because I like this test. Just imagine if there are five things happening at the same time, right? What I want you to do is I want you to put it into a priority order as to what you'll do first, second, third, fourth, fifth. Now, there's no right answer to this, okay? So the things that's happening at the same time, the tap's leaking, so do you go and turn off the tap? The phone's ringing, and there's no forward and no call forward and message bank, so they can't just leave a message. If you miss it, you miss it. Okay? Do you go up and pick up the phone? The next is the doorbell is ringing. Do you go and open the door to see who's there? The baby's crying. Okay? Do you go and check out the baby and see what's going on? You've also put the washing on the line previously and started to drizzle. So you bring in the washing before it actually starts to rain for it, okay? So I just want you to take a couple of moments, put them into order, okay? And then I'll reveal something about you. Okay. Yeah, you can go and find your pen and paper for those who need it. And I encourage you to do that, because very soon we'll do a more lengthy personality test where you definitely need pen. Sorry, I just thought university students, you'll have pen and paper. Or we can exercise your memory. You know, back in the Buddha's time, people used to memorize, truths and, sutras. And, nah, don't worry. I can't either. Or if you have your phone, you could also type it onto your phone. There you go. Or write on your hand. Back in kindergarten, we used to do that. Don't think too much into it. First thing that comes to your mind, what would you do? Bang, 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 bang. What would you do?
Wait.
Yeah. And then if anyone wants to share their answer, they can. When the person who said, wait, tells me that they're ready.
Wait.
It's good. It means he's taking this test seriously. So five things happening. Okay, done? Anyone else want more waiting time? Okay. Anyone want to share their answer? Yes, please.
I've got the baby
crying first. Okay. Yeah.
So first baby.
Yes. Okay. Well, you know what your answer tells me? It tells me you're probably American.
Canadian.
Oh, no! I'm so sorry. I've offended my first victim.
No, that's
all
right.
because of his accent. But no, I'm just kidding. Okay, cool, that's good. Remember that. Anyone else want to share? Yes?
First,
I
would turn off the tap, and then also the door, and then the phone, and then washing, and then ask the baby.
For those who actually know the person who's given us the answer, I think that's pretty accurate. Oh, I think the last answer maybe. I won't even go there. Alright, I hope you don't mind me standing, because it's just because I can't see the people like that. But okay, so let me now tell you what it all means. Sure, go for it.
Doorbell.
Baby.
Phone.
Yes.
Washing.
Okay, good. You can, but you still have to do one thing at the same time. So you have to go to either the baby or the phone at the same time. First. Okay. Okay. All right. Good. Okay. So you're probably Canadian, too.
I'm wondering, where are we?
Where are you?
How far are you from all those things?
How far?
Yeah.
You're at home, I mean.
No, but all those won't be in the same place. It will be.
You're thinking too much into it. And this is the thing with psychics, and it drives me crazy. Like, I tell them something, and they go, well, the tap's leaking, but how much of it is leaking? You know, do I have my best washing on the line or something like that? Just whatever. The first answer that comes to mind. Okay? Now you go back, okay.
Okay.
Ready? Everyone ready? Should I unveil the answer?
Yes.
Okay, so whatever priority you've actually put it in, that also reflects the priority you have in the following things in your own life as well. Okay, and the following things are, so they symbolize. The tap symbolizes money. Yes,
Lyra.
Oh, boy. I don't even get it, is it?
Money.
Oh, boy.
Oh, though, yes, that there's an exception to this. Usually it's money, okay, especially when you, yeah, but when it comes to some environmentalists, I remember I had a good friend of mine who said, no, I turn off the tap because, it, you know, to save the environment. So to her, it represents environment, okay? Yeah, that would make more sense for Linus, I think. The phone represents friends, okay? Doorbell is career, and I'll come back to baby. Washing is your appearance. Now, for those who put baby last, give us a minute, family. Okay? Family. Yeah. And that also changes too. So you may do this now, but maybe 2 years later, you may have a different priority order.
Washing
Your appearance.
Yeah?
That's sort of accurate? Kind of? Yeah? Seems to be a nod. Yeah, you're very accurate. Good. Okay. Now,
I know about
the money. Okay. Maybe you're one of the environmentalists.
Feng shui.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, water is symbolized.
Yeah, but that's only if there's a lot of it, right? It's just leaking.
No,
it's
not because it's because it's leaking, so your money is going away from you.
It doesn't matter if you have running water, right? You just said you have
money coming in.
Yeah, but leaking is not.
Leaking is going out. Like, I guess, no matter how you see it, leaking is going out.
But it's still money.
And then I was thinking, turning off the tap is just tap.
No.
Okay, no. I actually understand why he's asking this question. Which order did you put tap?
Actually, I put it last, but then later I was thinking, hey, turning off the tap just needs tap, so I shift it to first, and then I shift it back to last.
Okay, alright. Okay. It's just for fun. And in fact, mine is just for fun. It's just for fun. Okay. And that takes me to my next thing, which is, why is there this fascination with things like personality tests and astrology and things like that? What do you think? So astrology, I'm not talking about predicting the future, I mean, you know, not that kind of stuff, but the astrology, like, you know, you're a rat, and you, therefore you're like this and this and this and this and this, sneaky and greedy and all that stuff. That describes me, apparently. Okay, so, you know, why is there that fascination, you think? Is anyone interested? I'm guilty of it. Is anyone interested?
I can get very addicted to that point, that aha moment, when you go, oh, it's just like what I am, it's just like what, you know, what my personality is.
Yeah, yeah.
When we reinforce that sense of self.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The people that I know, they like to do these tests because they already know what they like, but they like the fact that, you know,
someone else will,
they're giving feedback about themselves.
Yeah. Anyone else? Yeah, I actually think you know, all of those factors are important. So definitely, it helps feed our sense of ego, right? You sort of read all the good stuff and like, yeah, that sounds like me, and then you get to the negative things. But no, that's not me. I don't know. This is a show of crap. Okay. By the way, tonight's personality test. It's not going to be feeding your ego. Just warning you in advance. Okay. The second point, which was raised, is that it actually is a way for you to reflect on yourself, whether you already know it or even you don't know it. It's almost like someone telling you what you are without being too personal about it. So it allows you to have a mirror to reflect back on yourself and have that sense of discovery for yourself. So I think those are the main reasons why people do like personality tests. And that's why I thought I'll use that tonight as a way of self-discovery as well. But before we talk about personality tests, I think we need to talk about what personality actually is. Personality, I did some research, and the best answer I got is it's a sum total of your mental and behavioural characteristics that make you unique. And my way of putting it is basically it's the things that make you you. Now, at this stage, you're probably going, well, hold on, Tina. This is a Dharma talk. This is Buddhism, right? How can you talk about you? That's not right. I mean, the Buddha taught us about non-self, right? Non-self. You. Doesn't work. And for those in the audience who may not know what non-self is, can some other smarter person who actually knows what non-self is tell me? Anyone? What's non-self? Oh, don't be shy.
Selflessness?
Yeah. That's a good answer. Good synonym. It's not exactly though. It's more that non-self, it says, what the Buddha says is this self, this thing that we call self is but an illusion. Okay? What we do is we grasp onto this thing that we think comprises our individuality that separates us from everyone else. And another common word that's used is ego. Okay, so when we hold onto this ego, it actually creates suffering. So if we consider that, this sense of ego and self and how that's an illusion, then how can we talk about you and my personality or your personality? And in order to answer that, if you're thinking about that, I want to use an analogy. The Buddha also said that this body is not ours, right? Now, yet when we get sick, we still need to go and see a doctor. We can't simply say, oh, you know, Buddha said that the body's not mine and therefore I don't have to worry about it and it's impermanent anyway. You still need to understand why you're sick and actually see if there is a treatment for it. Is that right? Now, if that's the case, we actually need to take care of this body because we need this body in order to practice and reach enlightenment. Even if it's not ours to control, even if it is not ours forever. And in fact, as a lot of people would know, okay. In fact, the first foundation of mindfulness practice, the Satipatthana Sutra, for those who are watching. The first part of mindfulness is the mindfulness of the body. So you can see that this body is also a part of our practice. Now, if I use that analogy, you can then consider how We need to understand the body in order to practice. And likewise, we also need to understand this personality, the temperament of ourselves, in order to practice as well. We can't simply say, this body is not mine, this self isn't mine, don't worry about it. You still need to acknowledge that this ego thing is still existing, and how to understand it and how to work with it. But just like we wouldn't say this body is mine forever, it's also important to recognise that the personality traits that we have is not a permanent thing too, that it changes according to context, circumstances, our maturity, our life situation, and a whole range of other stuff too. So our personality self is impermanent. It is anicca. And just like we shouldn't identify with this body as ours and get too caught up with that, because that would cause suffering, likewise we also shouldn't get too caught up in this temperament or these personality types as me and mine, because that itself can also lead to suffering too. But what we should do is we should actually recognise what is present in this body is but a collection of psychological and behavioural components that make up this person or this thing that I call mine. And what has actually happened to create this personality is a development over a long time of habitual tendencies. So we have habits that we reinforce over and over and over again, and that is what causes these personality types and also our ego. So, just to clarify, it's okay to have a personality. And not only is it okay, but it's also essential for us to understand it so that we can use it for our practice. And that's what this talk is about. This talk is about us or understanding who we are, the personality and the temperaments that we hold within us, and using that in order for us to practice, rather than just trying to get rid of it and seeing that it's not the right thing to have. Summarise, our temperaments and personality traits need to be understood, not eliminated. And also, by being aware of what these personality types are and knowing which one we fall under, okay, that is our Dharma practice. And that becomes the object of meditation and insight, just as the body can as well. Now, because I love creating sutras, there is a sutra called the Rohitasa Sutra. Now this is a sutra which a lot of people may have read snippets from. But what it is the Buddha himself taught that you can understand the whole world within your body. Right? And in this sutra, a person comes up to the Buddha, Rohitasa, and he asks whether he can travel to a place at the end of the cosmos where one is not born, will not age, die, or be reborn. This is from the sutra itself. And the Buddha replies, I tell you, friend, that it is not possible by travelling to know or see or reach a far end of the cosmos where one does not take birth, age, die, pass away, or reappear. But at the same time, I tell you that there is no making an end of suffering or stress without reaching the end of the cosmos. Yet it is just within this fathom-long body, with its perception and intellect, that I declare that there is the cosmos, the origination of the cosmos, the cessation of the cosmos, and the path of practice leading to the cessation of the cosmos. Now that last part about the origination, the cessation, and the path, what does that all sound like? Oh, sorry, I've got, there is the cosmos, the origination, the cessation. Yeah, I've got the first one. That's probably why you got confused. Four Noble Truths, doesn't it sound like that? Okay. So, what is the Buddha actually saying in this passage? That to understand the cosmos, where do you go? What do you have to investigate? Yeah, basically. Okay. You can go to the end of the world and you wouldn't find the answer. But you can find it all within this fathom-long body. And likewise, in order for us to actually understand this world and this life that we're living in, it's so important for us to understand ourselves. If you want to avoid samsara or the dukkha of life, there is no place like here, right here for you to understand it. Okay. One of the things I would like you to take home with you today is that whatever you have right now in this body as well as in this mind, that is what you can use for your practice. That's an important point, because sometimes people think, I can't practice now, I need to get somewhere or I need to be someone else in order to properly practice. I need to finish my exam before I sit down and meditate. Okay? I need to be calmer in order for me to meditate. I need to be less angry in order for me to be a good Buddhist. It doesn't work that way. You can actually start right now with whatever conditions you may have and use that as your tool of practice. Okay. Even if you're going through some difficulties in your life, challenges are the best teachers in life, unfortunately. Okay? You can investigate into that. If you get angry at someone, investigate into that. Know what it is to be angry. Know what it is to have anger or hate or jealousy. And even if things are going well, there is also a lesson in that too, because even those things are impermanent. And see your attachment to the good times. Now, as for personality, even the Buddha used the individual personality of his disciples as a way to teach them in the most effective way as possible. And so similarly, we should also understand what our temperament is and use that in order for us to understand truth. Now, the example I want to use is the story of Kemma. Okay? Now, Kemma, back in the Buddha's time, she was beautiful. She was gorgeous. That's not her, by the way. But she was beautiful, and she was very, very attached to her beauty and the beauty of the world and the luxury of the world. Very, very superficial, though. Okay? She was the chief consort of King Bimbisara. So those who know about the Buddha story, you would know how powerful King Bimbisara was. So imagine being one of his key consorts. And of course, King Bimbisara was also a devoted follower of the Buddha. And so he wanted her to be able to listen to the Dharma. So what he asked her to do was to go and see the Buddha a couple of times. But she wasn't ever interested. You know, going to a monastery, going to see, you know, something that's not even entertaining at all, she wasn't interested. So she was quite reluctant. Until King Bimbisara said, oh, but you should see this monastery. It's different to everywhere else. It's so beautiful. It's luxurious and all that. And so she goes, oh, okay, all right. So she was actually attracted to the beauty of the monastery. So she eventually went. Now, it is said that when the Buddha saw Kemma walking into the monastery, what he immediately did was he conjured up, made up with his supernatural powers, this beautiful maiden to start fanning him. So that's the supernatural maiden. Now, this maiden was even more beautiful than Kemma. So, of course, when Kemma saw this beautiful maiden, she was immediately captivated. Right? And when the Buddha actually knew that he had her attention, he then created this image of this beautiful maiden to slowly age. And with age, Kemma, before her eyes, she saw how that beauty was able to be transformed into wrinkles. The skin began to wrinkle, the hair turned grey and eventually fell out. And then it got to a point of age where her body basically collapsed with old age and just left a corpse and a heap of bones on the ground. Now, I know that's an awful image, but if you could just imagine the impact that would have on Kemma, who has never seen ugliness because she's always been filled with beauty. Right before her eyes, she saw the impermanence of beauty and the ugliness of the body. And it's said that because she was able to see that in front of her eyes, that allowed her to see the impermanence of external beauty and allowed her to gain some insight into her own attachment to beauty. Okay, and then she eventually became a follower of the Buddha. Now, for the modern audience, we may go, this is a picture here, you know, you can't just create something like that. But whether you believe that story or not, it's okay, because the message is there, though. Right? The message of impermanence, the message of attachment, but also for us today, the message that the Buddha was able to use what other people would see as Kemp's fault, which is her attachment to superficial beauty, he was able to use that to enlighten her. And that's the message that I want to impart today. So, with this in mind, I'll stop talking, because I know you're all very keen to get to the fun stuff. Let's do the personality test that I've prepared for you. This personality test is actually based on Buddha Ghosa's three personality types, okay? And if you're interested, you can actually go to the Unibuzz Library and have a look at Buddha Ghosa's The Path of Purification, which is this thick hardcover book that's blue, okay? Don't ask me which part of it is, because I haven't read the whole book, obviously, but this is a good summary of what he's talked about in the three different types of personality. Okay, so I think I've got enough for everyone. Don't mind passing around. It's going to take you a while to do, because there's quite a lot of questions, but I just want you to choose whichever one is appropriate. Okay? Of course, you're not going to say, yes, that is my response totally. Okay, so just choose the one that would sort of roughly fit with whatever your response is. Some people may need to share. I think we're going to have time. Yeah, try. I actually tried it on my boss today, which was quite entertaining, and he also said he couldn't answer the first question too, because he's a bloke, right? So he doesn't care about that kind of stuff. And I said, well, how about this? If you walk into the office, what would you see? You know, so just put it into whatever context makes sense to you, basically. The last one? Doesn't flow with it, if you use it like that. And if you don't use it at all, then you're antisocial and you've got bad words.
Yeah, right between A and B.
A and B? These two?
Yeah.
These two? No, because this is like impulsive. And this is people who are thrifty, you know? And they're prone to depression. It's just
this guy. Tend to grab it from the bottom.
No, but because it's scrunched up in such a way, obviously, they want to use every ounce of toothpaste. Yeah, very anal and... No. Perhaps we're going to have this conversation in the article, but I actually squeeze it. It's something similar to that. Just anywhere. Just toothpaste. Just wherever you grab it, really.
Not very ergonomical.
Oh, you're thrifty. Thank you. Yeah, there you go. So has everyone nearly finished, or have you given up on the test? You guys finished over there? Oh, you're done. Is it similar to the last time you did it? You changed again. Your personality changed again. Oh, that's because this time you're actually paying attention. Really? Oh, that's good. Yeah, Kelly's actually done it before. So what, sorry? You hardly have a B. Psychopath. I mean, no, it's okay.
It's okay.
Why reveal it until everyone's finished? Because now everyone's going to start surfing B.
Did we pay money for this?
Did you what, sorry?
Will you give us money and back to B?
Put B? No.
For the last question.
No, that's
totally
not really good.
I want my money back.
No, but I said. Unfortunately, this Dharma talk is for free. But the fact that I'm subjective to this when you make it paid. Okay. Everyone done? All good? Anyone need more time? It's okay. Yes, I do need a bit more time. Yes, all those who picked B for the last question can walk out now, maybe. Get out! Do we have a donation box around? Alright, so, many A's you've got? How many B's? How many C's?
We can.
Not
we
really.
Can.
You shouldn't. But since you are, just for you. But no, you actually shouldn't. You actually should just have one.
Can I come here half now? Not that many questions.
Yeah, sure. Look, quite honestly, you know, this is just a bit of fun. Don't take it too seriously. Now, you hopefully would either have a lot of one particular A or B or C, or you may have two. If you have a lot of everything, come and see me. You have a lot of everything. Okay, can you redo it?
Why? Throw
another piece. No, it's just, you know, it's easier to slot you into one of them. But it is possible if you have all of them. But you should tend towards something, hopefully. Look, put it this way, you would all have everything, you know, and different parts of your life, you know, you would have everything. But it would be nice if you have one thing that's dominant that we can work with today. That's all. Hmm? What would that be? That's a C. Yep. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, everyone done? Everyone's got their dominant temperament? A, B, or C? Yeah. Okay. Now what we're going to do is we're going to move around a bit. Okay, because you know, we want to add some spices to this dharma talk. For all those who've got A as their predominancy, I would like you to sit here. For those who have B, I would like you to sit there. For all those who are C, and there is a reason for it, you sit C. For all those who don't want to tell people what they've got and they don't want to sit anywhere, I want you to stand out here and go. You can sit in that corner, okay? And we won't hold it against you. It's totally fine if you don't want to really sit. Otherwise, move.
A,
B,
A,
B,
and
C. What about B and C the same? B and C, you will sit in between you.
I'll sit.
A and C. Maybe you can sit just there. Yes. A and C. A and C. Oh, no, A and C. You can sit in there somewhere. A and C? Okay, maybe we'll have an A and C section to see. So this is still A, so A and C can be B and C. A and B. A and B. Just think we want it, okay? Okay, so can I confirm? A, hand up. The Buddha was right. Okay. B. Okay. B and C.
Was there a B C?
B C.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll be a B.
You'll be a B. Okay. So B C. You're a B.
Which one be an A?
A,
yeah,
true.
Oh,
yeah. Can you move? Because I need to show a point. I need to show a vision point. Okay, let's start again. Thank you, Marcus. So A. A, good. B. Oh, no one. Okay. C. We have one C. Okay. That's not C. Okay. A, C.
A,
C? Okay, so the total of AC, and then BC. Okay, any other combinations?
All right.
Wow. Okay. Now the room's not very balanced, but this is actually pretty cool. Oh, hi, Ian. How are you? Oh.
We don't know about
For those who are listening to this, the President Ian has just come in. He's probably missed the whole thing. So everyone has just told him to get outside, which is nice. Okay, well, let me reveal what it all means, okay? What about A's? Let's start with you first. You're the grasping temperament, okay? So what that means is, you're quite likely to be, about desire, right? So you're about seeking. You're always wanting something, wanting more. You're likely to be addicted to something, okay? You grasp after comfort. You hate disharmony, right? You don't like conflict. You desire fulfillment through pleasures through the senses, okay, a lot of times, so the sensual world. Your liking is easily able to be turned into craving, passion, and sensuality. So in that sense, you are quite likely to be vain, full of pride, self-centeredness, greed, jealousy, and of course addiction, come back to that. You like human contact. In fact, a lot of time you crave it. And you always need to please people, okay? You need reassurance that everything's going to work out, everything's going to be okay, right? In meditation, you are likely to be aware of hunger or your addictive nature intensifies. You may choose the best seat in the room, the coziest, all of that. Okay? You may not fall all of it, but, some of it. That's the general idea of someone who's got... Wait. And also, if you are an extreme grasping temperament. Okay? But generally, that's what grasping all about.
But you see, right, because the answer for A, right, they would be the closest to the most neutral feeling you get.
Well, but that may be just because you're more comfortable with it. Well, how about this?
There's actually no neutral answer.
Yeah, there isn't.
Yeah, I suppose.
I think if there's neutral answer, then there's no point of the character. Okay. Alright. It's just for fun. Yes, I think so. You are so grasping. But actually, what we're going to do is the questions and the answers that you come, there's going to be different topics of interpretations. But generally, the grasping temperament is like this. And after going through what the three temperaments are, I'll ask you guys to be able to move around to your respective place. So it's okay. We're not going to see it in a bad way. And actually, I quite like that response because right now I'm telling you the negative part of grasping temperament. Okay? Well, considerably. So that's the negative stuff. But of course, there's always a positive, okay? Now, I'm going to show you the positive of the grasping, and of course, everyone in grasping is now going to stay in grasping. The grasping temperament, they also have the ability, because they're all about beauty and all of that, their ability is to transform anything that is sort of mundane into beauty and abundance. They're most likely to find contentment, okay, in what they're doing. And they're able to take whatever situation they find themselves in and bring beauty to it. They're quite optimistic. They like to highlight the goodness and generosity of the people within their lives. They like to make harmony to the community as well as beauty. They like to mentor and admire those around them. Now, do you feel like you're grasping? You tick off? Isn't that peculiar? Hmm. Okay, so that's grasping. The next one, which is B, and there's none of you guys here, is aversive. Okay. Now, you may find that if you want to switch seats now, you can. But the aversive character, just so you know, they're judgmental. Right? They reject experience. They don't like what is happening in their life. Okay. And of course, that's very extreme. I mean, you can't ever always be like that all the time, unless you're toothpaste number two, the depressed one. But it's just generally that's the flavour of their experience, right? So they can be very critical, fault-finding, quickly displeased, quarrelsome, disparaging, tight-fisted and rigid. So usually for them, it's easy for them to get angry, vindictive, haughtiness, hate. They have lots of hate, cruelty, aggression, struggle to control. In meditation, it's likely that they will become overwhelmed by judgments of themselves, of other people, their life, the room, etc. Okay? That's aversion. Okay, did you get a lot of A, B or C? Let me just return to the A. Oh, can you sit on that side of the room, please? Thank you very much. I'm going to join then. Okay, so you're the grasping temperament, just so you know. Okay? So, aversive temperament. So, B and C, you sort of have a bit of that in you. Okay? Now, by now, people are thinking, like, oh, what evil people. But it's okay, because there's always a flip side. Of course, the people who have the aversive temperament, they're able to transform what they know into the discriminating wisdom. They would have... they're not afraid of difficulties or to speak the truth about people. They can work with conflicts and creativity courageously and innovatively and different from everyone else. Then they can turn it into a caring dissatisfaction that leads to wanting to not put up with the mediocre. So usually the people who stand up and say, you know what, I don't like the way things are done here, we're going to change it and make it better for people. That's aversive. Right? There's nothing wrong with that. Okay? They're the people who are usually the devil's advocate in things, and they're likely to show the flip side, that things aren't rosy and that they need improvement. Okay? And there isn't actually a lot of people sitting on the side, which is interesting. So let's quickly move along and see. What was so funny? Okay. C, you have the unfortunate name of being the deluded temperament, okay? Deluded temperaments, they are, I actually don't like that name, but anyway. But usually it's this sense of uncertainty and unknown, not knowing what is going on, confusion. They seek ease in the world by ignoring what's happening, right, to establish some ease or dullness. And they're unlikely to actually act. They sort of worry. They're like worry rats. It gives rise to states of perplexity, worry, doubt, negligence, scattered thoughts, anxiety, agitation, inconsistency. In meditation, usually they would start to have doubt, right? Is this meditation actually going to work? You know, is this really going to happen? They start to wonder about what they're doing here and why, and they doubt themselves and the teachers. And they're likely to be doubting what I'm saying now. So they're probably going like, what? I'm not deluded. So that's pretty good. So it's a bit of a catch-22. And I know that sounds horrible, so let's look at the flip side, okay? the deluded temperament gives rise to spaciousness and equanimity and understanding, which of course leads to the wisdom of great questioning. They're also the people who are most likely to have the innocent and beginner's mind. And that's actually really important, because a lot of people who get stuck on the Dharma practice are the know-it-alls. The people who go, I know it all, you know, and they can't learn anything else. But the people who constantly question, really? Is it really going to work? How does that work? Who am I? What's going on? Where am I? Delusion. It also means that they have the beginner's mind. They can approach things from a fresh perspective. They are able to absorb new information. Okay? So, A, B, and C. You are free to move around. If you feel like, yep, I am where I'm supposed to be, stay where you are. If you feel like, no, actually, I think I fit in the other categories, move around, I won't hold it against you. But I would like you to move around now.
So, what is the
again? Yeah. For the president, let's go back to you. The grass and temperament.
Is there a
BC? BC, yes, there are BCs. You can sit there. Behind you.
What about people
ABC
like that?
Not really. No, I think at sometimes you would always change. Right? Like me personally, I am A, but at work I am B. I am a lawyer after all. Okay? Generally I'm A. Yes. So, can I confirm the A's?
Oh, you're no longer proud. Wow, still a lot of A's. Okay, B's? BC? Okay. And AC. Yes. So, it's pretty accurate. Okay, pretty accurate. You're probably in denial about the negatives, but it's pretty accurate. Can I ask you now, what do you think the Buddha has said, generally, people are of a certain temperament. Which one do you think he was referring to, A, B, or C?
A.
A. And he's actually accurate. And you know, when I tried this out at the Buddhist library, and I asked people to sit in the places that they sat as well, likewise, the whole room went A. I learnt my lesson, because A was like on the far side, so I started to have to change where I was sitting to face them, because there's just so many A's, right? Why do you think the Buddha would say that the grasping temperament would be the most common temperament, do you think? Think about the human condition. Think about what he taught about being a human. Yeah, craving, attachment, isn't it? Yeah, so you guys are in the right spot. Now, the Buddha also said that there is one particular temperament that is most likely to lead to enlightenment. Okay, which one do you think that would be? See? You wish. It's actually B. The aversive. Why do you think so? Why do you think they'll be the first ones to be out? No. Yes, B is the main one, the aversive.
They're more logical.
Yeah, because they're the ones who, yeah, that last lack of grasping, remember? They are the ones who reject the experience. So instead of being lost in the experience, they say, well, hold on. You know, they'll distance themselves. They're the ones who will be displeased at what's going on. And of course, all of that is the one extreme with ignorance. So it's aversion with ignorance. But aversion with wisdom allows them to have discriminating wisdom. And also a sense of loving kindness, because instead of it's about me, hello, babe, it's about, well, you know, that sense of letting go, non-self. Okay? Good. And also they're the ones who are likely to see the problems in life and go, well, I want out, rather than just wallow in, like, you know, how wonderful it is. And I can say that because I'm also grasping temperament. Sorry, I don't think the Buddha actually mentioned too much about these. Maybe he did and I just don't know about it, but that's the two that I know of. Okay? So, interesting, isn't it? Yeah. But I do want to say something. It's likely that you're going to fit into more than one category and you're likely going to change your temperament over time and also do different contexts. So I myself, at work, I am of the B temperament because I need to be. But generally, I think an A. You will also know that you're on a spectrum. So this is obviously one extreme of it, right? There's a whole spectrum of it. And there's also the positive and negatives of it as well. But why we're talking about this is because it's really important for us to understand and accept our personality. Because it can be really tiring to become someone you're not, right? To be perfect all the time. It's okay to acknowledge, well, hold on, yeah, right, I'm of that temperament, and I do have a bit of that, and I'm pretty annoying at times, but it's okay, right, accept it, and work with it, and that becomes your practice. But it also shows, that's why I have the second slide, that within each temperament, there is always the negative, which allows you to grow, right, to work with. You always have something to work with. But then there's always the positive, which is the potential. It's the potentials of how you can turn your temperament into something that works for you, just like Kemmer was able to use something that is supposedly a fault to be enlightened. Now, let's go back to using this as your path of practice. So for grasping temperament, let's go back to you. The suggestion for you to So I'm going to reveal your path of Buddhist practice now. So for A's, this is you. Try to balance your optimism with awareness of suffering. Because some of us, we get too caught up in, like, everything being rosy. Okay? We have to also acknowledge that there are down times as well. Yes, feel free to move around, it's okay. You can balance it all. And how you can do that is through your meditation. You may have heard of this type of meditation where you will contemplate on the ugliness of life, which includes old age, sickness, death, impermanence. And that meditation would also include the meditation of the 32 parts of your body, because part of the 32 includes considering things like parts and the ugliness of the body. Alright? And that's to create that sense of non-attachment. You should also practice generosity. A lot of times grasping, obviously, it's about holding on, about this is me and this is mine. So generosity allows you to let go. Similarly with renunciation. It's also important that you notice the ending of any type of experience. Instead of just impermanence coming, sweeping things away, and then you just quickly fill that with something else, right, that's grasping, what you do is you notice, okay, that is an end. That is impermanence right there. And then finally, it's about a disenchantment from sensual pleasures by staying with unpleasant situations rather than just pushing them away. So when you sit there in meditation, if you feel pain, instead of sort of not looking at it and trying to distract yourself with thoughts and feelings and happy things, you actually sit with it and investigate what that pain actually is. What is the pain in your body as well as the pain in your heart? And that's the way that a grasping temperament would transform their past practice. Before I move on, any thoughts, comments, questions from the A team or anyone else? Aversive, B. None of you guys are here, but for those who have a bit of it in them, this is something you could try and do. To transform the critical mind through wisdom and insight, to relax, question your own beliefs about being right all the time. Notice the joy, not just the suffering, okay? Because it's really easy for aversive characters to get depressed. Practice metta, compassion for yourself as well as other people. Have patience as well as faith. Have an open awareness of what life is really about. Soften the heart and connect with life by surrounding yourself in pleasant surroundings. That's almost like the opposite of aversion, of grasping. Right? These people really need to book themselves into a nice luxurious hotel and not go like, ew, you know, this is too hard. Okay. Then we have the deluded temperament. What they're what they should try and do is to transform a spaciousness into a state of rooted equanimity. Now, equanimity is actually really important in Buddhism. It's about the middle path. It is non-grasping onto things we like, and also a lack of aversion of things we dislike. So it's staying in the middle. It's a balanced perspective, equanimity. And it is one of, it's a very high ideal in Buddhism. So see if you're really lucky that you're able to have that potential. Now, for your meditation practice, we would suggest that you should be noting, right? So similar to what we did today. So just labelling what's going on in your mind, right? So if there are feelings that arise, just note the feelings, thoughts, whatever. And that's important because instead of getting stuck into doubts and questions and worries and anxiety, you just note it as such and you're able to let it go. Noting is easier than investigating in a sense, just for the sake of it. We then have mindfulness of hindrance of doubt, so being mindful of doubt and what it actually does, it hinders your meditative practice. And also body awareness, because the body is such a open thing for you to see, it's easier for you to be aware of what it actually is rather than to get lost in things that are much more subtle, like consciousness and feeling. So some of the things is like yoga, qigong, that kind of practice. And finally, putting yourself in a safe and pleasant surrounding to prevent disassociation, because it's easy also for things to just get so worried and caught up in anxiety, they lose touch with everything. So it's important for them to find connection with what they're doing. And having a safe, and so safe as in a place where they feel secure instead of feeling like they go, they need to question at the time their security and their stability. So safe and pleasant surroundings for them. Okay? Now, that would end this part. Are there any comments arriving? Yes?
You mentioned this is based on the Sunni market, the description.
Yes?
Is it also from the Buddha himself, or do you recommend that some of the
I think so. In fact, I think a lot of these would be suitable for all temperaments, but this is just specifically for that, it would be most useful for them. Right? I mean, really, Vipassana meditation, for example, I can't say any temperament shouldn't use it. It should be open to all of them, definitely. Okay. Anyone else? Thank you for the question. Okay. So, it is said that the Grasham temperament is bound by faith. Okay? So the Grasham temperament, and their path of practice is faith, whereas the aversive temperament is about discerning wisdom, and finally we have the deluded temperament, which is about the speculative aspect of practice. Oh. Hey, I ordered a cheeseburger. Oh, sorry, have you guys finished? Well, what do you think? So what, sorry? I think you're reading too much into the coffee. Okay. So which one's A? The one, B, C, and then the cheeseburger. Okay.
Where's your
system? Yeah. You're
C. Maybe not carrying B.
You
just
should be.
No. Just so that you're just a
glass of water.
Yeah, I wanted a cheeseburger.
I would actually say maybe that's B. Yeah. Okay, anyway. Well, to take this talk to a different level as well, as you all know, in Buddhism there's the three skills or the three marks of existence, which is anicca, anatta, and dukkha. Okay? What's anicca? Impermanence. Okay? Things come, things go, everything is changeable, including your personality. I hope tonight you actually see that this thing that we call personality and this temperament, this ego, this self, is changeable. Right? I mean, people who were sitting on that side now are sitting on this side. Okay? Different context, your personality will change as well. Okay, anatta, what's that? Oneself, okay? We've already explored what oneself is. It's not you. And I know that's hard to accept sometimes because it's easy for us to get caught up in it and identify with this personality. But you didn't choose to be A, B, or C. Right? You just circled the answers when you got that. But it's something that has arisen very naturally through habitual tendencies as well as the conditions of your life that had created it. And it's likely to change as well. So how can you say that this temperament, this personality, this self is you? So that's one way in which you can gain insight into what Buddhists acknowledge as non-self. Okay, now finally dukkha. What's dukkha? In terms of three marks of existence, it doesn't mean just suffering. What does it mean? Yes, and dissatisfaction in life. Okay, so likewise. Hold on. Let's take one step back. That unsatisfaction and that dissatisfaction comes from what? Why is life suffering? Why is there suffering in life? Yes, because we're attached to things, but that attachment itself wouldn't be a problem. Exactly. Very good. Okay. So it's because of a combination of anicca and anatta, and the fact that things that we are attached to will eventually erode one day, and they're actually not ours to control. And by us thinking that it will last forever and us trying to control it and identify it as me, mine, that creates the suffering. So likewise, our personality is dependent on a myriad of different conditions. So for us to get attached to it, and thinking that this is mine forever, this is me forever, this is Athena, and this is going to continue on and on and on, and it's not going to happen, that will create dukkha. So you can actually see the three marks of existence, these very sometimes hard to understand truths, can be seen by investigating into this idea of self and our temperament. I thought I'll end with a comic again. Okay. So we have another 20 minutes.
So that's kind of the first one, the astrology, zodiac, right, of the monkey of the thing, not really will reflect your personality, would you believe, or?
Well, I'm a Gemini crossed with a rat, right? Hence, I talk a lot, and I think that's pretty true. I never shut up. Apparently I've been, talking my sleep. My what, sorry?
What's the Mercurian? Gemini is on your planet.
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, but what I'm getting at is there may be truth in it. But I don't think I fall into every single thing that's said there. But even astrology itself, like, that is what you were born with. But certainly you will change. If who I am is exactly the same as who I was when I was a kid, that would be a real problem. Okay? It means I haven't been through it at all. But obviously, as we go through life, we will change. And also, that's the whole idea of the path of practice, that we can change and turn the negative into positive. Okay? So I think there is some truth there. It's quite interesting. I like it. But I wouldn't follow it by the book. And similarly, even these three temperaments, they're interesting, but they don't represent you completely. And also, that's a good point, because that will lead me to my final thought, and it's not the comic. My final thought is that when it comes to understanding who we are, we can't really just go to a talk like this one and find out who we are. We can't find out who we are in an hour sitting in meditation. Okay? It is a lifetime understanding of who we are. And the way we do that is not through external stimuli, but actually taking the time to watch who we are. And when I say watch, I use that word deliberately. To actually see ourselves, not as the person who I am, but as sort of keeping a distance, just to watch how I act and react in different situations, to really see who I am. Sometimes we are blinded to a part of us that we don't want to see, right? So we may not agree that we're an angry person, okay? And I don't think we're angry people, but there would be times when we would have anger, and then we need to recognize, oh, anger. And know what it is, and be able to see how that anger arises before it gets out of hand. So that's all part of our Dharma practice as well. Dependent origination, the 12 weeks of dependent origination, seeing how that actually works in our own life. Okay, so that's the final thought. Any other questions? Yes?
Why, when we say, for example, this was like angry, and when we say, okay, this is your fault, and when he was angry, and then we did say, this is your fault, and he becomes like much more angry,
Well, of course. I mean, if someone is really angry, and you say to them, wow, you're an angry person, just like if we were angry, of course it's going to agitate them, right? But that wouldn't be how you would respond to someone. They'll probably punch your lights out, right? But it's important to actually work with them. How did that anger arise? What actually happened? And we're going to do the next exercise. So the fun hasn't finished yet. Okay? I know, it's pretty cool, eh? And I'm going to show one aspect of how you can actually understand other people and how to accept how they are as they are. I know that doesn't answer your question completely, but it definitely is saying, yes, no, you can't say to someone, you're just angry. But even if you're angry yourself, right, say to yourself, gosh, I'm an angry person, you're actually taking your anger out on yourself. The better way is actually to recognize that anger, right, and see it for what it actually is and let it go. Right? Okay. And of course, you can't control other people. So if it happens that way, then that's it. Okay. It's about how you react to their anger, rather than making them change their anger. Now, where were you sitting just then? Was it A, C? No, sorry, you were B, C. Okay. A lot of times with A, we don't like either harmony. So we will do everything we can to create a harmonious environment around us, to the extent where we may actually put other people off, because they create this harmony. And we think we're just doing the nice thing, which is basically smoothing them over. But it actually comes from a selfish need to make everything around us smooth. So in someone being angry and your reaction is to quell that anger, you have to think what your intention is. Is it to quell their anger so that they're no longer angry at you? Or is it actually for themselves?
Actually, just to let them know that there was his fault. That's why his fault led to this kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make him realize. But of course, you wouldn't do it because...
Not at that point when they're angry.
Yeah.
But maybe later on, when they've calmed down.
Well, later on when you say that, the same thing again, you can't anger again, so...
Well, it depends on how you say it. And look, you know what? What I have learned is sometimes people just don't get it. And it's true.
How do we help?
You can't. You know, even the Buddha didn't help every single person he saw. He walked by lots and lots of people who he just didn't stop and talk to because it wasn't time. The conditions weren't right. They weren't ready. Right? And that's okay. I mean, even the Buddha, such a great teacher, he couldn't even teach everyone. I mean, who are we to think that we could just say to someone, hey, you know, snap out of it. And even ourselves, we get angry too. So isn't our path of practice more about ourselves rather than what everyone else is doing? And what if they turned around and said, well, actually, I'm angry because of you. Then what are you going to do? Okay, so with the 15 minutes we have left, I would like you to do some meditation. Okay? This time without falling asleep. Because this time, what I want you to do is I actually want you to observe temperament. Right. So, close your eyes. Please. No, it's okay. I don't want people to fall asleep. So just relax. Okay, so how you want to get into your meditation is up to you. You can either focus on your breath and taking a few deep breaths in, or simply just sitting and being mindful of your body. And I want you to recall your temperament. Really feel that temperament. I want you to observe that temperament within you. I want you to see, just recall the way you lived your life today. From the moment you woke up until the moment you stepped into the door tonight, can you actually see your temperament acting? The way you deal with people, situations, pleasures, difficulties? See your temperament functioning very clearly in your mind. See if you can understand how your temperament is an impersonal pattern that operates automatically. The way you react, the way you walk, the way you talk, automatic, beyond your control. Notice if there's any judgment of your personality. Are you pushing it away? Because you don't want to see it. We don't want to admit it. And if you do, just note that judgment and let it go. Tell yourself it's okay. It's not who you are. Now think about what is the most valuable thing about your temperament. What is one thing you can be proud of? Whether it's for the A, appreciation, for B, clarity, or for C, your easygoing nature. See what happens if you focus on these positive aspects rather than judging. Do you become more accepting of your temperament? Notice the change. Now I want you to think of a good friend or person close to you who has a different temperament to you. Think about what his temperament or her temperament is like. Whether it's A, B, or C. Once you acknowledge whatever their temperament is, be mindful of it. Now think of some times when you were with him or her. Just observe how their temperament functions with people, situations, pleasures and difficulties. Recall to mind some specific examples that could explain their behavior to you. Notice how that particular personality style is also impersonal to them and it operates within themselves. Now again, notice, do you have any judgment about it? Do you judge him or her because of that temperament? But maybe of it. If you do, let that judgment go and observe what happens when you let go. Notice what is the most valuable thing about their temperament. Again, whether it's appreciation, clarity, or that easygoing nature, or anything else that's positive. See what happens when you start to focus on these positive aspects rather than the judgmental aspects. Yourself, hold the other person as the object of your metta, loving kindness meditation. Bring yourself or them into your heart. Accept them for who they are. It is just a textbook. It is the reason for the way they act, speak, and do. And by accepting them for who they actually are, you can love them unconditionally, without judgment, without pressure. That's the basis of loving kindness. by Robinson, who they are. Now wish them well. May they be well. May they transform every negativity into positive. May they also reveal to themselves the path of practice. May their potential grow, and may their negative traits diminish. May they be well. Is that a more interesting approach to method meditation? Because obviously people know that when it comes to love, you need acceptance first. You need acceptance to understand. Hopefully tonight you're able to, in a fun way, sort of see a bit more about yourself, okay? Whether it's through the test or even just having this time to look within. And I highly encourage each and every one of you to spend some time to look within. And that would include observing yourself, the way you act and react to situations in your daily life. And sometimes you may stun yourself the way you react to things and you didn't expect yourself to react that way. So that's also part of understanding who you are. And it's only through understanding yourself that you can come to accept yourself, and also, of course, from there, to transform yourself. And that is obviously our Buddhist practice. Okay. Any final thoughts or questions before I hand over to Kelly?